This morning, a 72-year-old president, Donald Trump, predicted he would easily beat a 76-year-old former Vice President, Joe Biden, who has officially jumped into the race for the White House in 2020.
I am a young, vibrant man. I look at Joe. I don't know about him. I don't know.
Well, meanwhile, Biden, in his first TV interview since announcing his presidential campaign, said he was sorry to women who felt uncomfortable with his hugs and to Anita Hill, who testified before him in 1991 about what she claimed was sexual harassment by then Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas. Let's bring in our Friday roundtable. Jesse Holland writes for the Associated Press and is a host at C-SPAN. Hi, Jesse.
How you doing?
Doing well. And Domenico Montanaro, NPR lead politics editor, is with us as well. Hi, Domenico.
Hey, guys.
So here we are starting this weekly roundtable off talking about Joe Biden. He is definitely shaking up this race, Domenico.
Yeah, I mean, he's the big sort of boulder in the lake that we were all waiting for. He's now the 20th Democrat to get into the race, 20 for 2020, I guess you can say. And barring any other big surprises, pretty much the field is set. And I think that there's a few things that Biden has to do here to convince the entirety of the Democratic base that he deserves the nomination, because I think there are about two-thirds of the base that are open to his nomination, but there's about a third that still remain pretty skeptical of him, even though he's got very high favorability ratings, the highest, by the way, of everybody in the field. So I think the four things for me is he needs to remain disciplined, which has not always been his strength.
It's been tough for
him. He needs to answer these critics more fully. He needs to show that he can raise money and that he has the stamina to win, which President Trump was talking about.
Jesse, what do you make of the Democrats who have come out swinging already? Elizabeth Warren saying that Biden has sided with the credit card companies in the past as they tried to rewrite bankruptcy rules in the Senate. Bernie Sanders is hitting Biden for holding his first fundraiser at a home of a big money corporate donor. I mean, look, this is the first time we've really seen Democrats going after one of their own in this race.
Well, that's right. Biden is a big enough name that he becomes the target for everyone else in the primary. Before this, you've seen everyone pretty much stay apart from each other. You haven't seen any of the candidates taking on each other. But Biden, like was said earlier, Biden's the bull here. So everyone now has someone else to target on their side. Now, they all will be targeting Trump, but now they have Biden to look at as well. But, you know, Biden is also could be seen as the last gasp of the traditional Democratic politician. He's one of the old guard, and he's probably the old guard's last chance at getting a nomination on the Democratic side. So it'll be interesting to see how this works out.
Yeah, and I'll say one thing about how people are kind of going after Biden. You know, Howard Dean in 2004, when he was leading in the polls in that primary, he said at one of the debates, "Boy, you know, Howard, I realized I'm the front runner when I'm constantly pulling buckshot out of my rear end." Mm-hmm. And right now, that's what's going to happen to Biden, and we'll see if he can push through and be the person who leads beginning to end. It hasn't always happened, but it has happened often too.
Well, one of the areas of criticism that he's facing right now is about Anita Hill, who told the New York Times that she is deeply dissatisfied after speaking with Biden recently because she feels Biden is not taking enough responsibility for not letting other women testify about sexual harassment by allegations again of sexual harassment by then Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas in 1991. Here is Biden talking today in his first sit-down interview since announcing on The View.
I'm sorry the way she got treated. In terms of, I never heard say, if you go back and look what I said and didn't say, I don't think I treated her badly. I took on her opposition.
Jesse, is this going to be a big deal for Biden, or is this just the story of the week? And next week we will move on to other things. He has addressed this before, but this is coming up yet again.
Here's the thing with Biden's candidacy. He starts out with everybody knowing he's a flawed candidate. He's prone to gaffes. He has a history with not only Anita Hill, but with the crime bill as well. So he starts out with everyone knowing that he could be problematic. But the question that the Democrats will have to decide is that, is he the person they're willing to stand behind to defeat Trump? Will minorities get behind him? Will the unions get behind him? Will women get behind him? If they can make that decision, then Biden could come through with it. But no one is going to fool themselves that Biden's going to be the perfect candidate for everybody.
Domenico, I can already hear what Democrats will be saying about this interview. Just go back and listen to what he said. He said, I'm sorry the way that she got treated, not I'm sorry the way that I treated her. That's going to be an issue for him. And you know what's interesting as well? This is already so quickly been kind of a challenging week for him.
Well, it's going to be an issue. The Anita Hill controversy is one that he's definitely – it's one of his main vulnerabilities, as Jesse's alluding to. You know, you've got the 1990s era crime bill that he's going to have to answer to and talk about. And that doesn't say anything about the half a dozen or more women who've accused him of unwanted touching and making them feel uncomfortable. And Biden said that he gets it and that personal space parameters have changed, but – again, is that going to be enough for a 2019 Democratic primary? The rationale for his case, and he leaned right into it, you know, was about beating Trump. And Democrats lost by 70,000 votes in three states, in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And he is one of those kinds of candidates, he believes, who can win back some of those white working class blue collar voters. And the Democratic Party has always been a big tent party, but you're seeing more stridency from the party to not necessarily get behind the old guard because, frankly, in some ways, President Trump has made it so that they want to have a stronger stamp against him.
Okay, I want to ask about some of the things that are happening outside of the race for president next year. President Trump has been adopting an unprecedented strategy of refusing to comply with House Democrats' demands for documents and information on a range of subjects, from White House security clearances to recent personnel shakeups over immigration to his tax returns. Jesse, where do you see these fights leading? How far are Democrats willing to go?
Well, you will see Democrats push as hard as they can simply because they haven't had the ability to do it in the last 2 years. House Democrats are just now getting the gavels, and you'll see them use it as much as they can between now and the election. Now, for the Trump administration, their only goal is to stall until November of 2020.
Can they do that, though? I mean, the law says in the case of the tax returns that they shall furnish the tax returns.
Well, the law only says what the Supreme Court in the end says it says. So the Trump administration's plan is to get it into court.
Get a 5-4 decision in favor of the Trump administration.
And keep stalling until the it gets to the Supreme Court. And as we all know, that could take 2 years or more. So right now, their goal is to litigate, and let the House Democrats scream all they want.
Domenico, the president doubling down on his claim that he never told White House lawyer Don McGahn to fire the special counsel Robert Mueller, even though that's what McGahn testified to under oath during that Russia investigation. Let's hear from the president.
If I wanted to fire Mueller, I would have done it myself. It's very simple. I had the right to. And frankly, whether I did or he did, we had the absolute right to fire Mueller. In the meantime, I didn't do it. I'm a student of history. I see what you get when you fire people, and it's not good.
Are we going to hear from McGahn, Domenico, or is this going to be another stall tactic?
Well, again, Democrats want McGahn to testify, but whether or not he does or whether or not he exerts executive privilege or the White House does is a question. But I will point out this. McGahn was, you know, under oath. He was delivering statements to the FBI that could be, you know, he could be prosecuted if he lied. The president has not done that. Mm. So one outweighs the other at this point.
Are you saying that it doesn't matter if McGahn testifies because, you know, he's already on the record and under oath?
No, I'm saying if you're taking the president at his word and McGahn at his word, then the president could go under oath and he could testify. He could submit to answering that question with, you know, the threat of the law behind him, as McGahn did. And that's not what the president's doing. So you have to take anything he says right now with a grain of salt.
It's been not even a week since the terrible Easter bombings in Sri Lanka. More than 200 people killed. ISIS claimed responsibility for those bombings. We remember, Jesse, that President Trump recently held up a piece of paper and declared ISIS defeated. It makes me wonder if he's going to face any consequence for saying that and then seeing the actions of what appears to be ISIS here in Sri Lanka. It's kind of like President George W. Bush saying mission accomplished and then the Iraq war going on for a long period after that, or is it different?
No, you have to keep in mind that President Obama also called them the JV team and had to face consequences mm-hmm. for saying that. When it comes to foreign relations, we do take what the president says a little bit differently. So he may actually face a little pressure. But once again, how many times have we had this conversation? President Trump says one thing, reality shows another, and we move on to the next story. So will he face any undue pressure over this? Probably not any more than he has for all the other things he's said in the past.
Domenico, your thoughts in just a few seconds here.
Well, I mean, you know, I think the issue in Sri Lanka was one of sharing intelligence within their own politics. And, you know, that's a situation that obviously has been mirrored in some ways in the United States with the president, you know, speaking against the quote unquote deep state with the intelligence community in the United States. So, you know, I think that it's an important relationship that the United States has with Sri Lanka and Southeast Asia partners in general. And, you know, where the president stands on that, what he decides to actually do, you know, is going to have a lot of weight and consequences.
Domenico Montanaro at NPR, Jesse Holland at the AP and C-SPAN. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.